Okay, today is September 29, 2010. Whoa, in Radhadesh, this is part two, and part one was cut off. This is talking about organizational structure. I mean, we're talking about form follows function. We missed the first part of this half also. Sorry, the batteries went out. I had to recharge them. Okay, it's just for Jai Krishna Prabhu. This isn't for the world. I'm going to give him a little note. This is not for distribution. So what happens if you fill up ISKCON? ISKCON has two functions that I can see. It has the CON function and the S function. ISKCON. So it has the S function of a society and the CON function of becoming Krishna conscious. So ISKCON is existing. I was just, when I was in Hungary, Giri Rajmarj was giving class. The temple room was very crowded and people were pushing in at the door, and Shiva Ramar said, okay, everybody move closer to the Vyasa-san. And Giri Rajswami said, yes, Prabhupada, as one of the seven purposes of ISKCON was to bring the members of the society closer to Krishna and to each other, you know, so we all moved up closer to it. So one of our functions is to create a society. To create a society, you've got to have satriyas. Can't create a society without satriyas. Another function is to be Krishna conscious, for which you need brahmanas. All right? Those are our two functions. Our functions are to become Krishna conscious and to create a society. Society means you have to take care of people. Society means you have to take care of natural resources. You have to produce wealth. You have to produce tools and objects and houses and clothing. You've got to have some arts and entertainment. Right? Okay. That's a society. And those are our two functions. So then we want to figure out what kind of organizational form we want to have. Now, there's a lot of, as we've focused on one kind of organizational culture, one model of organizational culture, and this is the one most often used. There are other models of organizational culture. I have not taught you every single model of organizational culture. So there are also many models of organizational structure. I'm going to teach you one model. This is perhaps the most accepted, or certainly one of the most accepted models of organizational structure for those who study organizations. This model was developed by Mintzberg in a book called Structure in Fives. And as you can see, I did not create this presentation. Actually, I took two presentations of the same person and put them together. So it was written in 1983, Henry Mintzberg. And first he had something in 79 called The Structuring of Organizations, and then later Structure in Fives. It looks at organizations from the point of view of their design. Now this book, Structure in Fives, it's a hard book to read. It's not an easy book to read. If you're interested in this kind of topic, it's worth reading. I say here, it's not the last word in the field. There are critics, so there are people who look at his work and say, hey, this doesn't explain everything. And there are also new developments. Remember we talked about paradigms and how paradigms never explain everything? You can't get some view that explains everything. Even if you want to look at things in terms of varnas, varnas are within the purview of the three modes of material nature, and the three modes of material nature do not explain everything. There's things beyond the three modes of material nature. So there's not one paradigm you can look at other than the Hare Krishna mantra that's going to explain everything. Okay, so this person is saying, if you want to study this field deeply, this is an excellent place to start. So we're not saying this is it, we're not saying this is the only way, but this is a very good place to start. Okay, so we work in organizations, and we work with organizations. I'm not going to go through this. So we have to coordinate the people in the organization. How are they going to relate to each other? So there's different ways of relating to each other. And these are the five ways that we can relate to each other. One is what's called mutual adjustment. I work out with you how I'm going to relate with you. You work out with me how you're going to relate with me. And it's always changing. We're always shifting and changing the way we're relating to each other, who's in charge of whom, who's working with whom, according to the situation. There's direct supervision. I'm in charge of you, and I'm watching what you're doing, and I'm checking up on you. If I want to accomplish something, we assume that we have an organization to accomplish something, right? Remember, we have a function? So we have some function. So in order to have this function, how do I decide whether or not I'm achieving the function? How do I decide whether or not everybody's doing their part? How do I decide whether or not we're achieving our successes? So one is by mutual adjustment. I work in ever-changing teams or in personal relationship. One is by direct supervision. I just check up. I'm the boss, you're the employees, or you're the boss and we're the employees, and the boss is checking up directly on the employees. Then there's three kinds of standardization. So you see, the first two are more what we would call informal. And it's interesting that Mintzberg calls them organic. And that's particularly interesting if you look at Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's quotes, where he talks about mechanical and living and lifeless. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati talks about the idea of an organized church in an intelligible form indeed marks the close of the living spiritual movement. The bona fide teacher of the religion is neither any product nor the favorer of any mechanical system. In his hands, no system has likewise a chance of degenerating into a lifeless arrangement. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati is using words like mechanical and living and lifeless. So according to Mintzberg, organic means living, literally. That's what organic means. Organic doesn't really mean it's grown without pesticides. Organic really means living, just by the way. Organically grown means grown in harmony with living things, with the living system. But we only eat organic stuff. We have no way of eating inorganic things. We have no capacity to eat inorganic things. Human beings can only eat. All living beings can only eat. Maybe not all. Pretty sure all living beings can only eat organic things. One living entity is food for another. So the first two are organic, or living, and the last three are mechanical. So the last three is, I standardize, and you can see whoever wrote this used British spelling. I standardize the way things are done. Another is, I standardize the product. And another is, I standardize the skills that you use. So those are three ways of standardizing. Those are all mechanical. So one is, we make sure that we're on the right track by consulting, by discussing, by changing our relationships. One, we make sure because one person is the boss and they're on you, and okay, are you doing this, are you doing that? And the other three ways is we have some kind of standardization. Everybody has to do the same kind of work in the same way. We have to produce the same product. You can produce the same product any way you want. We don't care how you do it. But you better have the same product. And another is, you know, we're not looking for exactly the same product. And we're not looking it to be done in exactly the same way. But we're giving you all the same set of skills, which then you're going to apply in different ways to get different products. Is that clear? Okay, so Mintzberg says that an organization has five main parts. So he talks about, this is his basic motto we're going to look at. The top is the strategic apex. It's right here. And the middle line is right here. The operating core is right here. You notice these are all business language. Here is the support staff, and here's what's called the technostructure. Let's see what that means. So the strategic apex, that's the top-level managers who are charged with the overall responsibility for the organization. Okay? That's there at the top. The middle line are the middle managers. They connect the operating core to the strategic apex. So our strategic apex in ISKCON would be? The GBC. The middle line would be? temple presidents, Sankirtan leaders, project leaders. Okay, operating core are employees who perform the basic work related to the production of projects and services. Who are those people? Okay, the people who are working doing the basic work of the organization, doing the cooking, doing the book distribution, doing the deity worship, doing the cleaning of the temples, organizing the festivals. Okay, technostructure and support staff. So support staff are people who do indirect services for the organization, and technostructure are the analysts. The analysts create the forms of standardization. So the technostructure are people who are guiding. Who are they guiding? Who are the analysts guiding? The middle line and
the strategic apex.
Okay, you with me? And the support staff are somewhat like the operating core, but they're operating indirectly. Someone who's doing. We'll get there. We'll give some examples. Okay, now let's see. What kind of organizational structure we get depending on who has control. Now, control is, again, you can remember, the elements of control or the elements of power in an organization.
How is the control and the operating? And the people who are working?
Yes.
They have the control?
Okay. That's true in most universities and most hospitals. The people who really control a hospital are who really has the ultimate control in a hospital? The doctors. Who really has ultimate control in the university?
The professors.
Some places.
So that's a professional bureaucracy. Oh, yes, I taught you this before. Control and power. Do you remember my little memory thing?
Yeah.
Ice, good. I, C, E. And then what goes between? A, A, A.
Wow, I don't remember that.
Okay. Okay, do you remember what they stand for?
Advice. Control.
Authority.
These are all control.
Choice.
I found it. Try to remember.
These things don't work for me.
What works for you?
Writing it down.
That's good too.
Authority, exactly.
Authorization. These are all about authority and power. Authorization.
Execution.
That doesn't mean killing somebody. It means doing something.
Action.
Okay. If things are decentralized, if a lot of people are doing this, if one person or one group of people is doing all these things, it's very centralized. And the most decentralized is where your leader only has power for this. That's your most decentralized. So when we talk about control, okay, when we talk about control in an organization, this is what we're talking about. Who supplies the information? Who supplies the advice? Who makes the choice? Who authorizes, yes, this is what should be done? Who decides on the way it's going to be done? This is the process. And who actually does it? Yes.
Is the leader always going to be in charge of authorization?
If your leader isn't in charge of authorization, they're not a leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thus, that you know, you have to, in order to be a leader, you have to be in charge of authorization. That's your minimum amount of control you have to be. You have to have, in order to have control in an organization. In order to control what happens in an organization, you have to control authorization. That's minimum. Authorization, authority. You can't be the authority unless you can authorize something or refuse to authorize something. So regardless of what information is given, and of course, there's what's called the street-level bureaucrats. And let's say that people are doing action that's not what's authorized. People are doing unauthorized action. So you could have, you could say that the real power of control in an organization really rests with who does the action. But then if people are doing the unauthorized actions, and if the person who authorizes then has the right to terminate those people or punish those people.
Execute
those people. So then obviously the people who are doing the actions don't hold the real power in the organization.
Still would be like a few things we would say that students are the power of the...
Well, everybody has some power. Obviously, if you don't have any students who are your customers in a university, if you don't have any customers in any organization, you don't have an organization. You have to have patients. Patients have to be coming to the doctor. Students have to be coming. I mean, they have to be members. Okay. So we understand now what control means? Control means who at least controls the authorization and who controls as much of these as possible. What information comes into the organization? Who's giving advice as to how to use that information? Who's making the choices? Now, you can say choice and authorization is the same, but it might not be. In other words, the person making the choice may not be the person who's authorizing it. I can have a panel of advisors that I say, okay, you choose, but I'm the one who puts my stamp of authority on it. Does that make sense? So they could get abortion passed through.
Yeah.
That's the one authority he has.
He gives authorization. There you go. Okay, perfect example. Perfect example. So you're telling me the only authority the King of Belgium has is authorization. That's all. And they took him off for one day so they could get abortion passed through. Hare Krishna.
What was the reason he didn't want to be...
I guess he felt
he removed himself for one day or something?
No, they removed him.
But then he doesn't.
Then he doesn't have much authority.
I don't understand how they could have
him.
How
can they remove him? He
stepped down for that day. Anyway, the point is that you have the most decentralized, because I'm sure you noticed in the quotes, Prabhupada was talking about both bureaucracy and centralization. You have the most decentralized system when your person in control only controls authorization, and the most centralized when one person or group controls all of them. Anyway, that's what I mean by control. So if control is with the operating core, you have what's called a professional bureaucracy. If control is with the strategic apex, you have a simple structure. If control is with the middle management, you have a divisional structure. If it's with the techno structure, then you have a machine bureaucracy. And if it's with the support staff, you have an ad hocracy. Okay, so he's looking at organizations in terms of these four things. What situation is the organization in? How is it designed? What's the key part of the organization? Who has the most control? And how are things coordinated? How do people talk to each other? So it looks at those four things. How do people communicate? How are orders given? How do you receive the authorization notice? Who's the controlling factor in the organization? How is it designed, and what situation are you in? By the way, again, when we look at control, we don't look at who has a title. We look at who controls those things. Okay, so here's a simple structure. In a simple structure, you have basically, you don't have a techno system and you don't have a support staff. You don't have much of a, the middle line. You have the, you have the operating core and you have the strategic apex. You have your strategic apex, which is small, and a large operating core. So you've got one or two bosses and then a bunch of workers under them.
Looks like society today.
This is a simple structure, only works when things are very small.
Like a family.
You cannot have a large organization cannot be a simple structure. It's impossible, it breaks down. You just can't do it. And most things, when they begin with a simple structure. Not always. You can have a beginning thing that's an adhocracy. You can have some other things when they begin. But it's very common for beginning things. Something that's small and beginning. If something stays small, it can stay a simple structure. So this would be like a mom and pop store, or like in a family, any very small organization. There's one person or there's one small group of people who are in charge and everybody else works under them. And that person or small group of people who are in charge, they directly supervise everything. So they're working through direct supervision. That's how they make sure things get done. Things are not getting done because everyone has to do things the same way and everybody doesn't have exactly the same training and you're not necessarily all having to try to have the same output. So ISKCON in its beginning was definitely a simple structure. Didn't stay simple very long, but it's kind of its beginning. And we have a number of temples and projects that are simple structures. Antwerp temple. Okay, so that's three people. Three people might be an adhocracy.
Whoa!
It might be working through mutual adjustment, rather than a simple structure. Is there's someone who's in charge and everybody else is under them.
I'm realizing that I'm very adhocracy is like close to my nature.
Interesting. Okay, here's some examples. Husband and wife, maybe they have a secretary and an inventory balancer, and then they have salespeople. So the husband and wife are directly supervising everybody. No, mutual adjustment is an adhocracy. This is not mutual. This is direct supervision. Simple structure, there's direct supervision. There's a boss or one or two or three bosses, a small number of bosses, and those bosses work together. The bosses are not in a hierarchical position, and they're supervising everybody else. Okay, a simple structure. Low complexity. The work is fairly simple. The mission is fairly simple. There's not a lot of formality. It's a very informal, very organic kind of structure. It's very centralized. It's very, very centralized. Again, remember that centralized means that all those parts of authority are held by the same persons or groups of persons. So you have one or a small group of authorities who are collecting the information, who are controlling the information, advice, choice, authorization, execution, and action. They're in control of that. The environment around the organization has to be simple and dynamic. So for an organization to stay a simple structure, it's got to be in a surrounding area that's also fairly simple and changing. Because the simple structure can very quickly adapt to changing situations. If ever you have just one boss, the boss can just make a decision. They don't have to go through a committee. They don't have to go through a bunch of rules. They don't have to go through some organization. They don't have to go through some anything. They can just decide. So this is, as you said, a family. In most families, it's a simple structure. Even in most extended families, it's a fairly simple structure. Decisions can be made very quickly. The person making the decisions can be extremely flexible. This is a very organic structure. And this structure is used all over the world for small organizations. Okay, a machine bureaucracy. So my understanding is of all the organizational forms, a machine bureaucracy is a form that we should never even consider having in ISKCON. First of all, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati and Srila Prabhupada warn us that if we have a bureaucracy, everything is finished. And of the two kinds of bureaucracy, this is the most dangerous. It's called a machine bureaucracy, and Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati talks about a mechanical system. Don't go to a mechanical system. So here are some examples of a machine bureaucracy. The way most airlines are run, a steel mill, the way a lot of governments in the modern age are run, especially governments in like Russia, in India, China. Countries like that, really, China. A machine bureaucracy, by the way, it's very slow. It's very slow. A simple structure is very efficient. You want something done, you just get something done. Machine bureaucracy is extremely slow. And that's one of the things that Prabhupada criticizes about a bureaucracy. It's very hard to get something done. Everybody will always say no. Why will they always say no? Because a bureaucracy, you have to follow the rules. And there's a big rule book, and the rule book keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay, so in a machine bureaucracy, your main power is where? Where's your main power again in a machine bureaucracy? In your technostructure. And what does your technostructure do? They form all the forms of standardization in your organization. You have to do this like this, you have to do this like this. In a machine bureaucracy, you get everything done by standardizing the process. Everyone has to do everything the same way. There's a way to do things. There's a rule for how to do everything. Well, then the people who have all the power are the people who make the rules. Your strategic apex are the people who make sure that the rules get followed. But the people who make the rules are the ones who have all the power in that organization, with the majority of the power. So a factory is obviously an example of a machine bureaucracy. Here's another example. You have a general manager, resident manager, chief accountant, assistant accountant, credit manager, personnel manager, food and beverage manager, assistant executive manager, maintenance supervisor, director of marketing. Right.
So
where's the operating core? Everybody here is a manager. This is a hotel is a white collar machine bureaucracy. So this person's managing the garage, this person's managing at night, this person's managing this. This is the executive chef. Well, they obviously have people working under them. The beverage supervisor. You can have, you have a very clear line of hierarchy. Machine bureaucracy, high functional specialization. People have a role. You know, you have, we were talking about that before, you have your role to play.
It's such an American thing. Can I talk to your manager?
A machine bureaucracy is very, very much an integral feature of an industrial civilization. I mean, one of the main things that industrialization did to society as a whole was to move production away from simple structures to machine bureaucracies. That formerly a large portion of society was simple structures. I mean, you had, you know, a Shudra would have a little craft shop, little husband and wife family craft shop, where they make shoehorns, or they make, you know, rugs, or whatever. They make pottery, or there's a dance drama troupe, and it's a simple structure. And the Shudras were running things by a simple structure. Or a Vaishya was running their little farm by a simple structure. Maybe they had some Shudras working for them, they had some laborers working for them. And things were, you know, the Shudras were doing things from start to finish. There wasn't, everybody didn't have to do things the same way. Everybody didn't have to make the pottery the same way. Everybody didn't have to make the shoehorns the same way. They would make the whole car. They'd make the whole gun from start to finish. everything was a work of art. There was no standardization of process. There was no standardization of output. And there was not even a standardization of skills. You know, there'd be this particular way of making pottery. If you learned from this teacher, you had this way of doing it. If you learned from this teacher, you had this way of doing it. If you learned from this teacher, you had this way of doing it. Right? There were these kind of saris and these kind of saris and these kind of saris, depending on what skill you learned. It wasn't that everybody made saris in the same way. Everyone had different ways of doing it. So there was not standardization of skills. There was not standardization of process. There was not standardization of product. It was very informal. It was very flexible. It was very personal. It was organic. A simple structure is organic. Okay, machine bureaucracy is mechanistic. There's a high degree of centralization. So your technocrats are really controlling almost everything. Even the strategic apex people don't have much to say. The strategic apex people have to follow the rules too. It functions best in a very simple and very stable environment. Okay, now we're going to look at professional bureaucracy. In a professional bureaucracy, you see the technostructure exists, but it's very small. There's a small middle line, small strategic apex. We have the support staff. We have quite a few support staff, but the main power is in the operating core. So this is like a university or hospital. Yes?
So we don't want the support staff then?
Okay, so let's get there step by step. So in a hospital, who would the support staff be? No, the doctors are your operating core.
Nurses.
Probably the nurses, the secretaries.
Those who buy the medicine, I mean all the...
That could be those people who make those sort of decisions. So you have these people who are deciding on the processes. But, you know, those people they really can't decide that, because what's happened here, your doctors, let's look at a hospital, your doctors here have all supposed to be gotten standardized training. In other words, your assumption is that all of your doctors has received essentially the same kind of training. Right? And then they're supposed to apply that training in different ways. They're not supposed to apply that training in exactly the same way. When they see that someone's sick, they've got to say, okay, I've got to apply this training to this particular person. But it's assumed that they all have exactly the same kind of training. And they're the ones who hold the power in the organization. They're the ones who really decide what's going to be done and who do it. And the rest of the organization is facilitating them. Now, there may be, in a university or hospital, a machine bureaucracy and a professional bureaucracy operating side by side. So you can have the strategic apex and the technostructure is guiding the support staff. And is guiding the everybody else except for the doctors. So that's quite common, that they're operating side by side. Okay, professional bureaucracy has high social specialization. So one person is good at this, one person is that. Like a bureaucracy, people have very clear roles that they play. And you stay in your role. You notice in a simple structure, you might not stay in your role. You know, when I was running a small school, I was the principal of the school, but I also taught classes. And I also had to sometimes clean the toilet if the kids went in there and threw up or something. You know, I had different roles. I might have to order the books. You know, you do what's needed to be done. You have very flexible roles. In a bureaucracy, either machine or professional, you have very clear roles, very clear specialization. In the professional bureaucracy, there's low formalization. Things are done more informally. Okay, because they're supposed to be trained professionals that can act almost as their own authorities. So there's not a lot of formality. There's not a lot of centralization. There's no one person that holds all the power. All the doctors have power, or all the professors have power. It works best in an environment that's complex and also stable. And it doesn't have it has a low mechanistic structure. It's a mechanistic structure, but it's a low mechanistic structure. because it has some aspects of informality. So here you have almost, it's almost an organic structure, but it's not. Okay, professional bureaucracy standardizes skills, the operating core. The way it's designed is through training, through job specialization. So on a horizontal level, as far as the doctors, they have their specialized jobs. But it's very decentralized as far as anybody having a lot of power. Okay, here's some, we talked about universities, general hospitals, social work agencies, craft production firms. So again, if you're going to have a company where people are producing handicrafts, if you're going to have a pottery company, then you want to figure that each of your potters, they're supposed to have their own skills, and they each have a lot of authorities. Lawyers, the courts, accountants. Okay, the environment has to be complex enough to require professionals, but stable enough to use standardized skills. If your outside environment is constantly changing, then your skills are not going to keep working. We got that? Mm-hmm. Okay, so professional bureaucracy is a different kind of bureaucracy. So it's bureaucratic in the sense that coordination is by standards. You coordinate things by standards. Remember, in a simple structure, you're not coordinating things by standards. You're coordinating things by having a very immediate authority structure. And the standards are set by the professionals that are involved, not by the technostructure. So in a factory, the workers are not choosing the standards. The standards are chosen by somebody else. In a professional bureaucracy, the workers are choosing the standards. So that's a huge difference. In machine bureaucracy, you come in and you're told, okay, you're going to work this way, you're going to work, this is the way you do it. And in professional bureaucracy, you say, this is the way I do it. I mean, just like here in the college, nobody tells me what to teach. Exactly. They give me a general parameter. And certainly nobody's telling me how to teach. Now, I don't have all the power. If I did something really outrageous, you know, then I could also get kicked out. If I said, okay, we're all going to run around naked for our experiential learning or something. Mm-hmm. Now, there's what we call classification or pigeonholing as a core process. This is very important, and this is part of what makes a professional bureaucracy. I'm sorry, I'm probably going to go a little bit over today. I'm really trying not to. This is one of the things that makes a professional bureaucracy also a bureaucracy, that you have standardized skills. So you're thinking, okay, what case is this? Is this a cardiac case? Is this a respiratory case? Do we deal with it like this? You want to put things into categories. So you're trying to put your clients or your cases into neat predetermined categories, and then you apply a program for each action. Okay, so there's professional autonomy. So the doctors, the teachers, the social workers, and the lawyers, they can make their own decisions about how they're going to apply their skills. There's not a lot of planning and control system for that. Now, we find that many times in modern schools and hospitals, they're trying to make it more of a machine bureaucracy. I see a lot of move on the part of governments with schools, particularly, which is what I know about, to make them into machine bureaucracies, to say, okay, everybody has to teach like this. Everybody has to have a lesson plan like this. Everybody has to use teaching methods like this. If you're tired, you can open the window. And who are you responsible to? Who are you responsible to in a professional bureaucracy?
To the other professionals.
The other professionals and?
To
your clients. You're really responsible to your clients. You're serving your clients directly. And the support staff is serving the professionals. The professionals are really running the show. And technology may be used heavily by the operating core, but it may not necessarily be used to run the business. Again, this is starting to change. We're starting to see that there's hospitals and schools where they're trying to control everybody through technology. Everybody has to log in. Everybody has to keep track of what procedures that they've done. how they've done it. They're trying to standardize procedures often, that the doctors become almost like factory workers, that the teachers become almost like factory. There's a move to go towards a machine bureaucracy. We might ask, why does modern society move towards machine bureaucracies? And also, what's our philosophy?
Yeah, the philosophy is that
what's our philosophy in the modern society?
Less costs.
What's reality? How do we view reality in modern society? What's the philosophy of life?
Body.
We're just a body. And the body is just a
machine.
Modern philosophy is there's no such thing as life. Life doesn't exist. All there is matter. There's no such thing as life. There's only matter. So if all there is matter, if there's no life, then you're going to be moving towards a mechanical system of managing everything. Okay, administrative structures. So the professionals try to control the administrative structure. So in a professional bureaucracy, the teachers try to control the people who are making the decisions, or the doctors try to control who's making the decisions. As I said, sometimes there's two hierarchies. Sometimes there's one bottom up for the professionals and top down for the support staff. So sometimes the administrators are just controlling the support staff. And the administrators, therefore, they have very limited power. The professionals can say, no, we're going to do it our way. And the professionals are regulating themselves. Everyone's there to serve the professionals. Okay, some issues. It's not much coordination because standardization of skills is a very loose mechanism. Pigeonholing isn't perfect. And this is a problem with the professional bureaucracy. It's very hard to deal with incompetent professionals. It's very hard to get rid of bad teachers, bad doctors. And the structure is very inflexible. It's very hard to change it. It's very hard to change anything. It's very unwieldy. Okay, the managers who aren't professionals, they have a hard time supervising. You can't standardize. I can't do other kinds of standards. It doesn't work very well. You can try to say, okay, all the kids have to be educated like this, but it doesn't work very well. It's very complex work. Professional bureaucracy exists where the work you do is very complicated. And then it's got to be controlled by the people who are doing the work. It can't be controlled by other people. How can you tell me how to do something when I'm working with something that's very complex and changing according to the circumstance? And when you increase the control, then people can't do their work properly. So the main way you change is by getting in new people to do the work. Okay, divisional form. Divisional form here is in your operating core, there's all these little, probably, machine bureaucracies. These are all machine bureaucracies here. So you have a small strategic apex, you have a small middle. You have some support staff and some technostructure, and then you have all these little organizations within it. Now here, the main control is actually going to be who's in charge of each of those little organizations. Yes, definitely. So divisional forms again. Divisional forms means you've got this middle manager has control over this organization, this middle manager has control, this middle manager has control, this middle manager has control, and there's some strategic apex that's controlling the whole thing. Okay, so that's, I think, to a large extent, the way we envision ISKCON, or at least the way we envisioned ISKCON a long time ago when people mostly lived in the temples. So when ISKCON was a real temple-based organization, it was very much a divisional form. That the main authority was with the local leaders. So this has also high functional specialization. Now, the divisional forms are interesting because how each division is organized may be very different. So we showed you a model where each division was a machine bureaucracy. But you could have one division that's a professional bureaucracy, one that's a machine bureaucracy, one that's a simple structure. I mean, in ISKCON right now, we definitely have temples that are simple structures. We have some temples that are simple structures, some that are adhocracies, which you haven't gotten to yet, some that are professional bureaucracies, and then we have our strategic apex over the whole thing. But the main power in ISKCON, as Prabhupada set it up, is with the middle managers, not with the strategic apex. So this has high functional specialization again. So people have their roles. There's a lot of formalization in the divisions themselves, usually, although not necessarily so. You can have individual divisions that didn't have a lot of formality. Limited decentralization. So you have some decentralization in the fact that each manager is in charge. The strategic apex isn't directly controlling them. It works best in a simple, stable environment, and it's also a mechanistic structure. Yes?
Would it be like a franchise?
Could be. It could be. I would say that the divisional form is probably the worst explained here, because the divisional form could have so many varieties. This is assuming that you have a divisional form where every division has the same structure. But, I mean, you could certainly have a divisional form where each division had a different structure. Then you'd have many organizational structures within the great big parent organization. That would be very complicated. Okay, divisional form is what you're usually controlling is the standardization of outputs. So in a machine bureaucracy, you're controlling how you do things. In a divisional form, what you want to control is what's being done. You want to produce the same product everywhere. So in this way, ISKCON is very much a divisional form. Where ideas that we're supposed to be producing people who are engaged in pure devotional service in every single temple, every single project, every part of ISKCON, we're supposed to be producing people who have Prabhupada as their Shiksha Guru, who are loyal followers of Srila Prabhupada, who are obedient to the GBC, and who are aiming towards pure devotional service. So we have certain, that's our output. That's our product, you could say. And we're trying to have a standardized product that no matter where you join ISKCON, right, isn't that idea? No matter where you join ISKCON, that you're supposed to pretty much turn out the same way. In other words, it shouldn't be that if you join ISKCON in New Mayapur, you're going to end up at a different result than if you join ISKCON in Radhadesh. You should have the same output. You're not necessarily going to have the same process. Same process means it's a machine bureaucracy. Everyone does things the same way. And there, you may not necessarily have standardization of skills. So everybody might not necessarily be trained the same way. The key part here then is the middle line. So your key part here is your middle managers. The people who are in charge of each division have the most power. So large industrial corporations are example. And this is like an aggregate of different structures. So typically each division is fairly autonomous, and there's so much evidence that Prabhupada wanted each division to be fairly autonomous in ISKCON. Little interdependence between divisions. And this is very typical for ISKCON, that our divisions often don't talk to each other and don't depend on each other. You know, which is sometimes frustrating. Especially if they're both in the same city, like you were talking about Juhu and Chaupati. So like there's a school at Chaupati and a school in Juhu. And after the school in Chaupati had been going for 3 years, I arranged a meeting between the heads of this Juhu school and the heads of the Chaupati school, who were friends. And we also had the head of the Vrindavan school and some other schools were there, some other school heads. And they told me that until I arranged that, they'd never talk to each other about the school, about doing a school. So also when I was in Mayapur this year, the head of the Mayapur Institute, who teaches Bhakti Shastri, they made no effort at all to talk to the head of the VIHE who teaches Bhakti Shastri and who was there. I said, why don't you guys talk to each other? Why don't you share resources? So we have these different places. I mean, here in Radhadesh we teach Bhakti Shastri, Bhaktivedanta Manor we teach Bhakti Shastri, Mayapur Institute, Vrindavan Institute, Rupanuga College. There's several places that are teaching Bhakti Shastri. Do we ever all sit down together in the same room and say, how do we teach it? Let's share resources. Not usually. Even when we're in the same place, we don't talk to each other about that kind. We just say Hari Bom, we talk about something else. Yes?
Someone is teaching Bhakti Saradam?
I don't think so. I think the highest being taught right now is Bhaktivedanta in Vrindavan. I believe that Bhaktivedanta is only taught in Vrindavan. And I don't think anyone's teaching Bhakti Saradam. I could be wrong. I'm sure people are thinking about it. I'm 100% sure people are thinking about.
I don't know.
I'm sure the people who are teaching Bhakti Vedanta are thinking about teaching Bhakti Sarvabhauma. I'm completely sure. We have so little interdependence between our divisions, my friend, that I'm 99% sure that there's no one in ISKCON who knows the answers to all those questions. There ought to be, in my humble opinion.
Because if someone is thinking that I want to know who that is.
Oh, maybe you have to become that person.
Good.
But
I need some more association.
Oh, I don't know about that. Anyway, no, we have very little interdependence. And you can see that there isn't somebody, I don't know of anybody. They're supposed to be the BOEX who coordinates all the degrees. But I'm not sure. We could ask Braja Bihari. He would know. He's on the BOEX. So he's a person. He's right here. You could ask. So Braja Bihari might know who's teaching what degrees at what level, where, and how it's being done. He might know the answer.
I know who's teaching.
I would really doubt that even the BOEX knows about all the Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhava courses, because there's no requirement that anybody has to register their courses. Mm-hmm. Bhakti Rupa might know, because Bhakti Rupa is in charge of giving the degrees.
Yeah.
So he's somebody you could ask. But as far as interdependence, we have all these people teaching these degrees, and I know for sure that they don't share resources. I know that.
No, they create their own.
They each create their own.
I've seen that.
I know.
Four different
I really, it's already like 6:26, and I am feeling some, I'm feeling some anxiety. That I would like to. I've been really trying to end class on time. I know I'm going to be late today already. I'm talking very fast. I'm trying to cover very complex things in a very short amount of time. And because I spent a whole lot of time on organizational culture today, which I'm very glad I did, and it was very positive, but that wasn't part of my lesson plan for the day. My lesson plan was to do that for a half an hour, not an hour and a half. And anyway, so be it. But so I don't have a whole lot of time to talk about this. I just simply want to mention that in ISKCON there's very little interdependence between the divisions. We tend not to share resources. We tend not to share knowledge. We tend just not to share things. There's a lot of duplication of effort and a lot of not communicating. Yeah.
That
he didn't want centralization. He wanted each person to learn how to do everything.
Yes.
Yes, definitely. And I'd say that's generally good. It'd be nice if we would talk. My opinions, it'd be nice if we would talk to each other. So I wouldn't like to see somebody who said everybody's got to use the same Bhakti Shastri materials.
Or assessment.
I wouldn't like that. But I would like it if we would at least sit down together in the same room sometime and say, here's what I'm learning, here's what I'm using, would you like to take a look at it? Maybe you'd like to use it. Oh, what do you do? Oh, that's interesting. What do you do? Oh, does this work well for you? Oh, yeah, that's called mutual adjustment. We don't have much of that. It's very, very frustrating that I'll go someplace and find out that someone's developed a Sunday school curriculum and nobody knows about it except for people in their area, and then I go to other places. Are there any Sunday school curriculums? You know, everybody's asking for it. Nobody knows that it exists somewhere. So I'd like some community. I'm not talking about control. I'm talking about communication. That divisions are just separate markets. So we also do this, of course, we do this by geography, but we also sometimes address separate markets in terms of market characteristics. So some divisions are addressing the yoga market, and some divisions, just like the college here, is addressing a very different market than the college in Hungary, not just geographically. Divisional leaders are very strong. Now, this is waning in ISKCON because the influence of the temples is going way down. Now, unless we're going to talk about divisional leaders as anybody who goes and starts a little preaching program. The headquarters focuses on performance. Now, I'm not sure if our headquarters focus on performance. I know that Srila Prabhupada wanted our headquarters to focus on performance. Prabhupada wanted the strategic apex to focus on are devotees coming to the morning program, chanting their rounds, following the principles? Are they developing the symptoms of devotee? That's what Srila Prabhupada wanted the strategic apex to focus on. I'm not sure what the strategic apex focuses on, but I don't think they focus on it. I'm not sure what they focus on. Now, this is a problem with the divisional form, that divisions, in fact, in general, organizations tend to move towards bureaucracies. And there's a tendency in a divisional form for the divisions to move towards being machine bureaucracies. Because if you're going to have standardized outputs, there's going to be a tendency to standardize the process. There's going to be the tendency to say, if we want to have everything coming out the same, then we've all got to do it the same way. And we're looking at that, you know, kirtan standards, deity worship standards, management standards. We're moving this model of organizational structure says if you have a divisional form, the tendency is going to be to move towards each division becoming a machine bureaucracy. And we see that that's a tendency. Am I making sense? It becomes because, okay, that split and separate organizations is a realistic alternative. So one way to avoid becoming machine bureaucracies is you break up into separate organizations, which of course is not something that we want to do, but it's something that's happened anyway. There's also a tendency for a divisional form to split. And one of the main things that our strategic apex tries to avoid is having our divisional form split. But there's also a strong tendency. I should say that the reason that any organization tends towards a bureaucracy is, remember, a bureaucracy is run by rules, right? Now, as an organization gets bigger, it tends to see the same situations more in space, in places. It tends to run into the same situations over and over again in different places as the organization gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And they say, well, why should we deal with this on a personal level each time? Why don't we just have a rule to deal with it? And as an organization goes on through time, then it tends to see the same thing over and over and over and over again in time. So as an organization gets older, it tends to encounter similar situations over and over and over and over again. You know, how are we going to deal with sannyasis who fall down? Well, one sannyasi fell down here, another sannyasi fell down here, another sannyasi fell down here. But one sannyasi fell down this year, another sannyasi fell down this year, another sannyasi fell. So we're seeing the same situation reoccurring, either over a geographical area or in time. And I think, well, the most efficient way to deal with a recurring situation is to make a rule for it. And then we don't have to spend the time sitting down and figuring out how to deal with the situation. We just follow the rule. So because of that, as organizations get bigger or as organizations get older, their natural tendency is to go towards a bureaucracy. It's a natural tendency. You have to do something. Yadayadayi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhutinama dharmasya tadamanam srajamyaham. There has to be frequently some restoration. Things tend towards degradation in this world. Okay, what powers does the headquarters have in a divisional form? They can decide what divisions there should be, where to allot money. Of course, we don't have that in ISKCON. We don't have centralized money. Very little of it. We can decide how we're going to control performance. We can appoint the divisional managers.
I've seen some mention that there is
We're starting that.
Not much.
We are starting to do some international fundraising, which, by the way, I think is a good thing because there are some projects that just aren't local. Some projects, like the one I just finished, is an international project. Appointment of divisional managers, but I don't know if the strategic apex. I don't think the strategic apex should be the ones responsible for allocating those sort of things. Appointment of divisional managers. We are having more and more in ISKCON now people starting their own projects where they're not necessarily appointed by the GBC. Monitoring the divisions on a personal basis, that's something Prabhupada wanted, and providing certain common support systems. So the strategic apex in ISKCON also provides certain support systems that are available to the whole society, like books, like book publishing, or like certain educational resources. All right, conditions. Generally, a divisional form works in a simple and stable environment. and generally large and old organizations. Okay, these are often stages of divisionalization. I don't have time to get into most of these. Some advantages compared to a machine bureaucracy, but how you allocate money, training your managers, you're spreading your risk. One reason Prabhupada wanted the divisions to be autonomous was to spread risk. So if one temple went bad or one temple fell, that it wouldn't affect everybody else. It was also another reason. Strategically responsive. You can respond better to your local environment if you don't have your strategic apex controlling the whole thing, if it's controlled more locally. There's a tendency to centralize decision at headquarters. So we're also seeing that tendency. The GBC keeps trying to do that. They're not succeeding very well, but they're trying. Okay, problem is you can have centralization of power. It can become more bureaucratic. And full splits may be stronger than having pure divisionalization. Okay, a divisional form has no ideal environment, outside environment in which to work. So a professional bureaucracy works best in a stable, complex environment. An adhocracy works best in a complex, dynamic environment, which you haven't discussed the adhocracy yet. A machine bureaucracy works best in a simple, stable environment, and a simple structure works best in a simple, dynamic environment. There's no particular environment for a divisional form. Okay, now we're going to look at an adhocracy. So an adhocracy, you mostly have the support staff who has the power. So research and development. You know, we want to find a new drug for cancer. No standardization of output, no standardization of process, no standardization of skills, no firm hierarchy. This is an administrative adhocracy for an oil company. High social specialization. So instead of role specialization, instead of everybody having a particular role, very little formality, very little centralization, and a very organic structure. People who specialize in dealing with other people rather than doing a particular role. People may play many different roles. The way that things are coordinated is by mutual adjustment, consensus. You sit down and have a discussion and we come to an agreement. No one even takes a vote. Right? There's no one boss. So we're going to talk about the difference between a support staff and an operating core. So let's say in research and development, the operating core might be your technicians who are actually, you know, doing at the experiments. Or you want to, like Thomas Edison when he was devising the light bulb. So he had a bunch of people working under him to try things. But he was really the one with all the power. Focus on innovation, no standardization. You don't want to standardize, you want to innovate. There's no one commander. So the experts have the power. The experts have the power in an adhocracy, but they're not using standardized skills. They're not becoming coordinated by standardized skills. They're becoming coordinated by their social skills and how they deal with each other and how they communicate with each other and how they respect each other. They may have all different sorts of skills. They may be bringing in a wide variety of different skills. So they have meetings, they have the project coordinators, and the project teams are based on the particular needs. So the teams are going to keep changing. The structure is going to be very fluid. So at some time I may be on a team to do one thing, another time I'm on a team to do something else, another time I'm on a different team to do something else. And maybe in some teams I have a leadership position, in some teams I have a following position. There's not some, not necessarily somebody who's always a leader. And even the person who may be always a leader, they also take sometimes a role on a team as a follower. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
So there may be an overall boss, but the overall boss sometimes just goes on a team as a team player. And someone else is in charge of that team, and that person is not the boss of that team. And they have a way in which they formalize their social interaction. They have norms for social interaction, but they don't have formality of skills. Solves problem on behalf of clients, like think tanks. For example, our Shastric Advisory Council is definitely an adhocracy in and of itself. Research and development, very creative advertising companies, manufacture a prototype, we want to manufacture something new. Experimenting theater company. And it's the kind of bureaucracy an adhocracy is likely to turn into is a professional bureaucracy. So it's likely you start standardizing skills. So the administrative adhocracy solves problems, run projects on behalf of itself. So often the operating core is done by a separate organization or contracted out. So we have prototypes, we have designs, we get someone else to build them, we get someone else to do them.
What's a venture team?
I'm not sure. In order to be administrative, you have to have a lot of coordination. You're not following rules, you're not following some procedure, you're not just following some hierarchy. And people are working, as I said, in project teams. I mean, a very good example of this is the project that I just finished working on. We did this project entirely as an adhocracy. So it started with one devotee in London talking to me, let's do this. And eventually the project got so big. It started out as a fairly simple structure. And eventually it got so big we needed a project team. So we had a project team for the translation. We had a project team for the audio. We had a project team for the marketing on Janmashtami. And different people had different positions in the different teams. And those positions would change. So I was the overall leader of the project. But I had minimal leadership in the audio team. I didn't even understand how they were doing it. You know, somebody else had responsibility for that. And I just sat down with them sometimes and talked about, okay, what are you doing? What are we doing? Okay, now what are we doing over here? How are we doing this over there? And they tried to explain to me what they're doing. I said, I don't even know what you're doing. It's okay. You know, and then there were sometimes, some part of the audio project, we had to do what was called the extra sound spots. So I took responsibility for the extra sound spots. So even though that was managed by somebody else, I had responsibility for that, and I ended up managing that. And then after I finished managing that, I gave it back to the leader who was managing the whole thing, and he took charge of it again. So it was a very fluid kind of structure. And you know, we had one person who had responsibility for all the audio, then he delegated someone else who would be the project manager for all the editing. And he took charge of the original recording, and some other people also took charge of this thing for the recording. And again, we would just meet. And when we met, there was nobody in charge. I mean, everyone knew that it was basically Urmila's project, but I wasn't there as the in charge. I just wasn't. I mean, other people had as much responsibility in different areas as I had. Now, there were many points where if I had dropped dead, probably the project would have died. I mean, until it was at a very advanced point, I was the only one who really kind of was looking at the whole big picture. But I was not in any way controlling people's process and output and skills and directly supervising them at all. So the administration ensures proper management, anchoring of projects. It's often very demanding administration, monitoring and redirect projects. And the distinction between the management and the workers becomes very unclear. You often can't tell who's a leader and who's a follower, which is exactly what Prabhupada talked about. He said, don't say they, you are all they. And there were a few people who just did a job. You know, that the the project manager would say, okay, take these files and edit them according to this and bring it back by tomorrow. But basically, that's not what we had. And it's hard to split how you formate strategy and how you implement strategy. The strategy tends to evolve. You don't really sit down and have a strategic planning meeting and say, okay, now we're going to plan our strategy. It's more indirect. This works in an environment that's very dynamic and complex. And the main things that need to be handled are the interdependencies. You have a lot of interdependencies here. You're frequently going to change your product. So now that we've done this project, guess what? Now that we've done this project, we've turned it over to someone else to manufacture it. We didn't manufacture it. This was also the idea of outsourcing things. You know, someone else is doing the printing. Someone else is putting in the sound. Are you all familiar with the project that I'm working on? Some of you are, some of you aren't. So we outsourced it for someone actually to produce the product. And now we're finished with that product. We're going to produce another product. You know, that's the next thing. Okay, everybody has to, okay, what's the next thing you're going to do? So frequent changes to product. Organizations that are autocracies are often young. Why? Because organizations tend toward the bureaucratic as they age. And there may be some element of fashion in autocracies. They're very dynamic. They're doing projects that apply to the particular time and place and circumstances, not that they're just doing the same thing over and over again in time since the beginning of eternity. Some issues with autocracy, unclear, multiple, and changing lines of authority. People who really want a really stable environment are going to go nuts in an autocracy. Who's in charge? Who do I talk to? Who has responsibility for what? There's some ambiguities. It's always changing. It's not very efficient. And autocracy is not getting things done with the least amount of cost, with the least amount of time, with the least amount of trouble. It's trying to produce something that's very creative. They're trying to produce something that's better. You're really going for quality. The machine bureaucracy, you're going for sameness. Right? In the autocracy, you're going for quality and specialness and excitement and dynamic. Okay, this is a summary, and I do apologize for going late. Here we have a summary. A simple structure. The way things are coordinated is Mr. Boss or Mrs. Boss and the employees. The most important part is your strategic apex. It's centralized vertically and horizontally. Very, very centralized. It's not bureaucratic, but it's very centralized. A machine bureaucracy, the way everything's coordinated is everyone does the same. Everyone does work in the same way. If you have some work to do, that work has to be done in the same way. Everybody's got to cook two parties in the same way. Everybody's got to dress the deities in the same way. Everybody's got to distribute books in the same way. The key part is the technostructure that decides what the processes are. The only decentralization is horizontal. So a machine bureaucracy is highly centralized and highly bureaucratic. A simple structure is highly centralized and not bureaucratic at all. A professional bureaucracy is standardized by skills. The main people that are important are the operating core. It's not centralized. Professional bureaucracy is not centralized, but it's very bureaucratic. So simple structure has high centralization, low bureaucracy. Machine bureaucracy, high centralization, high bureaucracy. Professional bureaucracy has low centralization, high bureaucracy. Divisional form, you're trying to produce the same product in each division. The people who have the most power are your middle managers. And there's some vertical decentralization because each manager has a lot of power instead of the top managers. In an adhocracy, the way you get things done is by mutual adjustment, by consensus, by your social relationships. The main people are your support staff, your thinkers, your inventors, your creative people. Not necessarily workers. Your creative people, they're not workers. They're not managers. They're not the people who are devising the process. They're the people who are coming up with the creative ideas. And it's both decentralized and unbureaucratic. So no centralization, no bureaucracy. And I don't think we can see this, but that was what I just said. And I don't think you can see this either. That's a whole summary. Sorry about that. Okay, these are the tendencies. So if you have the apex as your power, then there's a pull to centralize, 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 centralize. So the more the strategic apex has power, the more they want to centralize things, which is exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing that the strategic apex in ISKCON keeps trying to centralize. If the operating core has the most power, they want to professionalize more and more and more. They want to have more systems to train people in skills. They want to have more control of their professionals. If you have a divisional form, you have a pull, what we call balkanize. In other words, there's a pull to separate. Each division has a tendency to split off from the organization and form their own organization. If you've got the techno structure here, their pull is to standardize. So that, you know, we want everything, because they're the ones who are making the rules. We want everything done the same way. And if you have the support staff, their pull is to collaborate, which is exactly what I was talking about. I was talking about, why don't we collaborate? What's wrong with this gun that we never collaborate? Right? Why? Because people in an autocracy, how do they control everything? By mutual adjustment. By mutual adjustment. So I'm seeing this gun, we don't do a whole lot of mutual adjustment. Even within a division, we don't do a whole lot of mutual adjustment. Even within one temple, within one community, we often don't talk to each other about what we're doing. Everybody's just doing their own thing. And if you like an adhocracy, what you want is you want there to be mutual adjustment. You want there to be collaboration. You want there to be teamwork. Okay, there we go. We went over time. I am sorry. We don't.